What is up, everybody? Finally, the Josta Show is back. Thank you so much for your patience and your understanding and your kind words of support as I've been dealing with this hard drive debacle. Just to catch everybody up who might not know what's going on or might not be involved on any of my social media, the Ink and Iron Show went awesome. I was out in California, got the Chuck Billy episode up the following Monday. Everybody was raving about that. I saw people talking about it online. The listens were great. You know, the numbers were big. Was looking to get this Jake Bannon episode up and, you know, start cranking out all these new episodes. And I dropped my computer off the side of my chair that I sit in my living room. And I thought nothing of it. I picked the computer up. It looked fine. Then I noticed the mouse wasn't clicking on anything. Then the little arrow turned into like a little white like Mickey Mouse glove. It was weird. I'd never seen anything like it. So I thought, all right, let me restart it. I go to restart it, and then it was just done. Toast. Gone. I took it to a repair shop thinking, you know, it would be okay. They're like, take it to the Apple store. I take it to the Apple store. They do a bunch of diagnostic tests on it, and they're like, this is bad. You're going to have to take it to this other repair shop. I take it there. Now it's Thursday. There's no new podcast. People are like, what the hell? What's going on? I'm like, I don't know. So I take it to this other repair shop. They said this should be fine. We should, you know, we'll clone the drive, and we'll be able to get the GarageBand files off there because I've been recording the podcast in GarageBand. And, of course, it says it's going to take like 4 days to clone the thing. Well, I figure, all right, the podcast is going on hiatus, no Monday episode. And now we're 2 episodes behind, and I'm freaking out. I'm losing sleep over the weekend. I'm calling the place. Is it done? What is it saying? Whatever. Then on Monday, the guy was out sick, and the other guy had some miscommunication where he thought the drive had cloned and it hadn't. Anyways, so let's all keep our fingers crossed that I can save all those awesome episodes that I had recorded. But instead of wallowing in my misery and feeling sorry for myself and beating myself up about it, I went out and I got some new episodes. I got a new hard drive put in the computer. I figured everything out, and I'm just going to hope that we can get those old episodes back and get them up online. But for now, we just got to move forward, and I got an awesome guest today, Matty Montgomery from the band for today. I'll be talking to him in just a bit, but thank you, everybody, for all the kind words on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You know, just keep your fingers crossed. At least having last Thursday and Monday off, it made for a lot of people to go actually check out some older episodes that they missed, and I saw a lot of good feedback about, like, the Mike Muir episode. Some people had missed the Matt Brown episode. Some people had missed the Alex Skolnick episode and the Nate Newton episode. So it's nice to see that people caught up on some episodes while we had a little bit of a break. But for now, it's back to business, and you know, really looking forward to the future. But I just got to be better about backing up the episodes as soon as I'm done recording them, so that we don't run into a problem like this down the line. Big thanks to Quello for supporting me through this. You guys know that if you've signed up, that this is one of these sites or one of these apps, like, you get lost in it. There's so much good content on there. It's not like YouTube where, you know, you got to scroll through all these camera phone videos and all these live shows with crappy audio. This is, it's just the best and largest collection of full-length concerts, music, documentaries, and streams on any device. They have a ton of awesome metal DVDs on there too. Sign up using my link though, okay? Check it out at Quello.com/VIP/JamieJosta. You know, it's spelled like hello, but with a Q instead of an H. You can download Quello Concerts on your mobile app store from Apple, Android, or Windows. They're also available on Apple TV, Roku, PlayStation, Amazon, and Xbox. Use that link and you will get a free trial and will get a kickback to the Josta Show when you watch some of these live DVDs. So Quello.com/VIP/JamieJosta. Big thanks to Monster Energy Drink. And big thanks to everybody who came out to the Hatebreed 20th anniversary show at Toad's Place. Talk about an emotional night. Just great energy. I mean, the vibe was just electric in that room. The volume of the crowd and just the enthusiasm and all our family and friends there was just really, really good time. And then to turn it all around and, you know, rush to the border and get on stage early in the afternoon and do another show within, you know, 20 hours or I don't know, probably less than, more like 16, 18 hours later. It was crazy, but it was great. We played Amnesia Rock with Snoop Dogg and Slayer and all these bands, but I literally got off stage and raced to the airport, got on a plane, got home, hoping I was going to get the hard drive fixed and get Monday's episode out, but that obviously didn't happen, and now just been you know, freaking out all week. But it's good to have this episode here, and once again, huge thanks to Razor and Ty and Maddie from For Today. Just really psyched I got to sit down and chat with him. So thanks to Claire and Carrie over at Razor and Ty Records. As you'll hear in this episode, we got a nice exclusive announcement about the new For Today record. But check it out. Without further ado, Maddie Montgomery from For Today. Hit the music.
Start this motherfucker!
All right, so I got Maddie from For Today on the podcast. Thanks so much, man. You're doing me a major solid.
Yo, my pleasure, man.
Those who have been following my hard drive drama, I sent it to this like forensic data, you know, specialist, and they're gonna let me know hopefully by next Monday. This is coming out Thursday, so if you're listening to this on Thursday, hopefully by next Monday I'll have some information. But I saw that you were in town. I hit up Razor and Ty because we're technically label mates still, yeah. Unless we sign to another label, but
okay.
But you guys are on this tour, you're kicking ass. The last record, you know, they sent me, I listened to it, and I was like, man, I feel like you guys are probably the most pop. Is it safe to say that you're the most popular modern band with modern heavy band with Christian content?
There's a few of us, like August Burns Red is out there.
Okay.
You know,
I didn't know that was,
yeah, those guys are out
part
there.
Of their message.
There's a couple others. It's not as common as it once was. You
right.
Know?
Because when I was starting out,
yeah,
we had bands like, I think Shai Hulud, I thought was originally yeah. like kind of down with that. And then there was, Strong Arm yeah. and
bands like Zayo.
Oh, right. Yeah. Overcome.
Yeah.
Were you into that? Those bands
yes.
growing up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Those were the bands that I was like about growing
so up. So you were exposed to bands with a Christian message early on in your life.
Yeah. I was not a Christian. I didn't care. I just wanted to hit people in the pit.
Right. You were about the mosh.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, but then when you started a band, you thought I could include this in my message and maybe yeah. help some people.
Yeah, man. I mean, we, you know, I was playing this kind of music for a long time before I cared about God. This is just the scene that I grew up in, and, you know, it's just a place where I belonged. And then, you know, things changed in my life, and I began to value faith a lot more than I did growing up. And so I thought, well, you know, I still know that I love playing in bands, so, you know, why not kind of incorporate this
yeah.
new perspective into the music that I make? So,
and so, like, when are you born again or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me, like, all right, so I did a song with POD, and I think the content of the song was, you know, I guess you could say inspired by or influenced by like a Christian message, but I don't claim myself as a Christian. So I think some of the fans were confused, but in your world, when you're doing a song like that, would you collaborate with someone who isn't a Christian?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. It's not like this exclusive thing. Like sometimes I think people bill you as like this hardline, right-wing conservative type of yeah. Christian group.
Right. Yeah, dude. I mean, politics and faith are two totally different discussions.
You know?
I mean, the reason actually the historically the reason Jesus was killed is because he refused to help advance the political agendas of the religious leaders at the time. Everybody else was trying to use their faith to affect politics, and Jesus refused to do that. He just hung out with sinners. And so they killed him because they said, this can't fly. We have an agenda we're trying to push. And so, you know, the same, I think, is true today, that there's politics and there's faith. And so, man, I understand that some people are looking for hope and some people are looking for answers. Some people are looking for a purpose in life. And man, I found that in Jesus, and I would love to share that with people who are looking for it.
Yeah.
But if people aren't looking for it, I can't make them.
But is it hard to write lyrics that are like, because you want, like you were saying, you before you were into Jesus, you were into the mosh.
Yeah.
You want to have the mosh call. You want to have the intense thing. Is it hard to do
both?
Well,
I can't say the F word now.
Right.
I used to be able to. I can't do that anymore.
Okay.
But, you know.
But how do you make it sound hard with a hard message without being like sounding exclusive and making people think you're this hard edge, hard line Christian band?
If you figure that out, let me know.
Okay.
That's the tightrope I've been walking my entire career with for today.
Right. But I think also because in the past people observed the band as kind of being like socially conservative, maybe that's why they confuse the political stuff with it.
Yeah, man. And we've had ex-members who wanted to do the political
thing.
Okay, right.
So they're not
stuff.
Even in the band.
They're not in the band anymore. Okay. Yeah. So we kind of got this, you know, some stigma on the internet or whatever as being a band who's like trying to do the like political, the right-wing Christianity thing. I just love Jesus, man, and I love this scene. And I think the thing that I loved about the scene growing up before I found faith or cared about God is that, you know, this was a place where you could be a misfit and you could be an outcast and you could be accepted.
Yeah.
And, you know, if any band, Christian or otherwise, begins to come against that, I think that sucks.
Well, you know what else? I think you get held to a different flame too, being a Christian, because like with the hardcore bands that were talking about religion or different religions rather, like if you look at a band like Cro-Mags or a band like Shelter, I don't feel like they ever got the flack that some of the Christian bands did, even though they were pushing a Hare Krishna message, which is a religion.
Right.
So
it's weird, right?
Yeah.
There's a stigma attached to the message of Jesus that's not attached. I could stand up on stage and talk about Buddhism or veganism or whatever, you know, any other worldview, and people be like, all right, you know, maybe I don't agree with that, but I can respect that they stand up for what they believe in.
Right.
But when I stand up there and I talk about Jesus, people get pissed about it, man.
But so would you maybe change your lyrics, say, for the next album? Which, before we started recording, you said you're going to give me a little exclusive on.
Yeah, man.
For the next album, would you ever, like, have the idea of maybe making it a concept album to tell more of a Jesus-like story and have it be less kind of taken as this, like, oh, if you're not with us, you're going to hell type of attitude?
Yeah, man. Well, we've never had that attitude, but
I think it's hard, person who's not like in your inner circle.
I just
of fans.
Didn't want any of your listeners to think that's what that's what our songs are like. But we, you know, we actually just finished recording an album, and in this album we took a real different approach. You know, I've been to a lot of churches and hung out with a lot of Christian people, and I find that, you know, they as Christians, they're really quick sometimes to say, you know, man, the kids that you guys go reach at these shows, they're struggling with depression. They're struggling with, you know, abandonment. They, you know, they had parents fail them or friends fail them. They're dealing with betrayal. They're dealing with addiction or suicide or whatever. And you know, it always kind of rubbed me the wrong way, man, that Christians hide in their churches and they say, yeah, those people out there are dealing with this stuff. But the reality is, like, we're all part of a human community.
Yeah.
And if some of us are dealing with it, all of us are dealing with it. And so we approach this album, you know, instead of saying, yeah, you might be struggling with it, we approach this album as this is something that we collectively as a people are facing. You know, whether it's we wrote a song about abandonment, we wrote a song about suicide, the dealing with the suicide of a friend. We wrote a song about betrayal. We wrote a song about failure, and you know, and realizing that even if these aren't things that I personally struggle with, these are things that we as as a community, as a scene, as a culture that many of us are facing. So the things that I think all of us need to be conscious of and be aware of. So, you know, instead of doing the whole like, well, you know, I'm a Christian and you're a sinner thing. The reality is, man, we're all sinners. Like that's why I need Jesus. And so, you know, I'm not afraid to face these things with the people that are in our scene, the people that I love, the kids that I grew up with, because these are things that need to be addressed and that, you know, if we're ever going to see things begin to change for some of the people in our scene, somebody's going to need to be willing to bring these topics up.
And if you know, as a believer in Jesus, if you've had a positive experience, right, and you want to share that with somebody and maybe their life could be changed for the positive, you would think that it would be an inclusive thing, but you're right. Like, and I've come in contact with Christians that were like that, you know, they just go to church and they keep to themselves.
Right.
And it's kind of like, look, if you're not with us, you're not against us. I just don't, you know,
I don't care about you.
Yeah. I got my own problems I got to deal with.
Right.
But I think there's people from all religions that are like that. But also there's, you know, people who are, you know, Christian who say, well, okay, if you don't accept Jesus, then you're going to hell. So then you have this whole group of people. Well, that's like, well, okay, so that means Gandhi's in hell and all these, you know, like great people are in hell. And so I would think it'd be hard to recruit people based on that type of ideology.
Yeah. And I mean, ultimately, like my job isn't to recruit people or to try to like make Christianity seem cool. My job is to just share what I have seen and heard, to share what I've experienced of God, you know, and I know that he can set people free from suicide and depression because he did it for me. You know, I know that, he's a father to the fatherless because I grew up without a dad, and I know God has been able to transform my life and to give me the strength to be a father for my kids, even though I didn't have a father for myself, you know? So, you know, this is for me, it's not a matter of, you know, come and join my club. It's a matter of, man, I know that there is power in Jesus. I know it. It's not a matter of opinion for me or speculation or perspective or brainwashing or upbringing. It's a fact. I've seen it in my own life. And so if that's a power that people are looking for, I can invite them to come and experience it for themselves.
Do you ever feel like though, when you're going on as a support band, that you are kind of in a way like recruiting people? Cause you're preaching to the non-converted in a way, right?
Well, and you know, I want to give them the invitation to come and find what I've experienced. But at the end of the day, if they're like, nah, I'm not about that. I don't want to do that. Then, it's not, you know, I'm not going to trap them in a corner and try to talk their ear off and be like, no, you got to pray with me right now. You got to come to church with me. You got to read this book. It's like, man, yeah, I'll give you the invitation. But if people don't want to respond to it, then that's between them and God. That's not my business, you know?
Right. Well, you must have so many kids that come to you that, you know, say, okay, your lyrics have helped me, or just come to the show. Like you said before, you were into, you know, Christianity. You were just going to the show to get this release, right?
Yeah.
Like to get your mosh on or whatever.
Yeah.
But so now when you're involving this intense sort of cathartic, you know, process that I see every night at Hatebreed shows, but now you're involving it also with a spiritual and religious kind of aspect. It's got to be even more intense, right? Because people feel like they're reading your words and you're, you know, speaking words that were inspired by, you know, these great events in your life that made you change into this person who you now are, that these people probably want to aspire to be like.
Yeah, man. The stories that we have seen or the stories that we've heard of things that have happened at our shows are insane. I mean, this week I had a girl come up to me and hand me a pocket full of razor blades and say, I've been cutting for 10 years. Show me the scars from her wrist to her shoulder, all the way up her arm. I've been cutting for 10 years. And I have been listening to your music lately and I'm done. I want to be done with it, you know, and walked away from it forever. Just left those with me and said, I don't need these anymore. I'm free, you know, and that's incredible to me, you know, and I think about, some of these kids that we met, a friend of mine, a girl who has become a friend of mine, her name is Kelly. We met her years ago and she, was planning to kill herself that night. She was sitting in her car crying, thinking about that she was going to kill herself that night, heard the message that we had to preach and decided to give it another shot. The last time I talked to this girl, she was about to head to Africa to be a missionary full time, to work in an orphanage and love these kids that people have forgotten about. And, you know, so I could go on and on and on for hours about the stuff that we've seen people being healed, people being saved, people being set free from addictions in a moment because of this message of Jesus. And that's, I think, why it's an offensive thing, is because it's not just a, another self-help method, that there's real power in it. It's really a provocative message. I think that people, if they really hear what we're saying, they realize that it demands a response one way or the other. It demands a response. And I think that's cool.
So do you think you guys could have a chance then at like getting a mainstream media outlet to cover the band like they have pop Christian groups? Or is it because you have this heavy metal, hardcore, hybrid of music that it still kind of has this stigma around it? Because I feel like it's almost like it's, and I just deal with this with Hatebreed just, for the last 20 years, we've had our little glimpses into, some mainstream exposure, but it's very hard. I could imagine that for you guys, even though, like you're saying, your message is positive and people are having all these positive reactions to it.
Yeah.
How do you get to that point where you can actually get a real platform and not just be playing these thousand cap clubs or whatever, or just being played on the Christian, college 2 a.m. radio show?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, really, when we started this, we knew we're kind of a subgenre of a subgenre. We're not a metal band. We're like a metalcore band. And we're not just a metalcore band. We're a Christian metalcore band. Like, we alienate the vast majority of our potential listeners, if not because of our style, because of our message. And, that's kind of been a thing that we've been okay with. It'd be awesome to be playing stadiums and have, like, mainstream radio exposure, but... Now, the reality is that if it's not because of our genre, because of our message, I think there's a lot of people that shy away from it. But, the thing that I love about this kind of music is that it's not for pussies.
Yeah.
thing I love about this kind of music is that it's for people who aren't in it to try to, get rich and be like the hot new rock star, but for people who have something that they're passionate about, something that that they're willing to stand up and fight for. And and that has been... our perspective, that's been our approach since day one, is that this, this is not about becoming the next big thing. I think, we're playing the wrong genre of music if we want to do that. But this is about a message that we would die for tonight, and about making sure that, even if it's just, a thousand kids or a few hundred kids here in Hartford, that we give it everything that we got, because some of these kids need to hear what we have to say.
Now, when you're up against all these obstacles, right? And you're on a tour, which I'm familiar with one of the openers, Gideon. I've heard their music, a really good band.
Yeah.
But like for me, I don't know these other bands, right? Mm-hmm. And you're all touring in vans. You're all up against the same, you're out here fighting for the same crumbs that we're, even I feel it still to this day. Like when I'm on a tour, I go, these kids, they get the records for free. Yeah. They complain about the door prices. They complain about the shirt prices. You're really up against all this, adversity when you're in the music business, right? Yeah. We just had this thing come out with Taylor Swift. She changed the Apple Music.
She took her stuff off Spotify.
Right. She got Apple Music to actually pay the artist for the first 3 months, which she doesn't.
That's cool. Yeah.
Does that type of stuff trickle down to your level? Like, do you read your statements, and do you get, your iTunes royalties and things like that? Or do you even care?
I mean, I care. I've got a wife and two kids, so I'm concerned about making sure that I get paid for what we do. But, the amount of money that we get paid for any streaming outlet, YouTube, Spotify, those sorts of things, Pandora, is so minuscule that if we ever see any of it, it's maybe a couple $100s.
Right.
Most of it will probably go to our label.
Yeah.
But if any of it gets through the cracks, it'll be a very little bit.
If we all got together, though, and all pulled our collective catalogs off of it, they said, like Spotify, that the most people, most listened to genre is heavy music.
Oh, really?
Right. So if all the heavy music was pulled off of there, it would really hurt their business.
Make a statement.
Could we, then barter or whatever, bargain, or what's the word, leverage a better deal out of it?
Yeah.
Do you think it's possible? Or are we too segmented?
I don't know.
As heavy music. I mean, there's, like you said, you're a subgenre of a subgenre.
Right. There's I don't know if the thing is that we're too segmented or if it's that we are trying to find creative ways to adapt and just sort of accepting this new streaming platform as like the way it is, you know, instead of fighting to go back to the way it used to be, to kind of adapt and find a way to capitalize on the way that it is now and the way that it's going to be in the future, you know. And I'm, to be honest, I'm not entirely sure what that is at this point, but I think that may be the answer is to get ahead of the curve instead of fighting the progress of the industry.
When do you want the new album to come out, or do you know?
Yeah, it'll be coming out in the fall. I want to say September.
Okay.
Sometime. Yeah.
And so when you did this deal, you renegotiated your deal with Razor and Ty, or did you were already in like a
we signed a 3-album deal with them. And this is the third of.
Okay.
Of those. Yeah.
So if you were to re-sign, then maybe you could renegotiate the streaming royalties and they could push, since they probably have a lot of successful artists who are on these streaming platforms, maybe they could push and say, yo, we want a bigger cut.
Right.
A lot of labels did that with YouTube early on.
Yeah.
And I was like, I missed the boat on YouTube, but it would have been great if I had like a YouTube channel or whatever. If we put Headbangers Ball on YouTube for free or whatever, it would have probably been the right idea. But I mean, is it too far gone? Did we miss the boat on a lot of these technologies, or are you on any of these new ones like Snapchat? And
I got an Instagram.
You did. And what's been your experience with that?
It's cool, man. You know,
a little there's a little bit of whininess there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is a given. There's whininess on Facebook and Twitter. And
are you on Facebook?
Wherever there are people, there is whininess. Yeah, I'm on Facebook. I got all that stuff. But
you don't let fans on it?
Do you? Yeah, I let fans comment on stuff that I post.
Okay, so you allow fans on your personal Facebook?
Oh, no, I don't have a personal Facebook.
Oh, okay. You just have like a Maddie.
Public figure thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So they
you'll post updates from the road and things like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, there's and this is, I think, still there's still a frontier to be explored in terms of music business. And, you know, it's going to take people from our world being innovative and creative and really brave enough to try something that hasn't been tried before. I mean, somebody was crazy enough to say, well, let's start this website where people can upload their own videos. And someone probably told them, why are people going to make videos and upload them onto your website? What is it called? YouTube? That doesn't even make sense.
Yeah.
You know? But that idea worked out pretty good, I think. So, you know, somebody in our world, somebody with a heart for the music industry is going to have to be free enough or brave enough or crazy enough to be innovative and to try to take a step that nobody else has taken and to take the music industry from, you know, not back to where it was, but to take it from where it is to where it is going and to make sure that we as the artists are able to sort of capitalize on that progress instead of just getting run over and forgotten about in it.
Have you thought about ever doing like spoken word or have you done anything like that where you go speak at a church or
I do that a lot. I actually may do that more than I play with the band at this point.
Yeah, because that I would think could be really beneficial, not only to just build your brand, but also, you know, push your message that maybe someone might not listen to over such a heavy song.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in churches, there's a lot of people who will never listen to our music who would listen to me speak, you know, and that's cool. And I, you know, I love those people. I appreciate them. But, you know, I didn't grow up in churches. I grew up in venues.
Yeah. What ethnicity are you?
Half black and half white.
Okay. So, and where'd you grow up?
Mostly in Michigan.
Okay. Whereabouts?
South of Detroit.
Okay, so you know, so you've been to all those venues, the, you know, the St. Andrews and the
Clutch
shows
Cargos and stuff like Toledo. That. I used to go to Headliners in Toledo.
Yeah. So like when you were coming up in the scene and you're going to shows and stuff, did you go to all types of shows, or did you like at what point did you kind of like lean more towards the stuff that was faith based?
I've never really come to a point in my life yet when I leaned exclusively to stuff that was faith-based. You know,
listening to Deicide and Slayer.
Right, like I went to see Zayo, but they were on tour with Every Time I Die and Dillinger Escape Plan, you know, in like 2004 or something. So, you know, I went to see As I Lay Dying. They were a Christian band, but then they were also playing with Throwdown.
Right. I remember that.
You know, went to see Norma Jean, but they were on tour with Unearth and in Atreyu at the time. So, you know, it was never like, all right, I'm only going to go to some Christian concerts. You know, there were some Christian bands thrown in there, but, you know, the bands that I was going to see were just heavy bands that were playing cool shows that I wanted to go check out.
When everything went down with As I Lay Dying and Tim's situation, I mean, did you get asked about that a lot in interviews?
Yeah. Well, mostly just online. Like, kids have tweeted me, like, Maddie, what do you think about this?
Yeah.
That sucks. Probably the same thing everybody else thinks. Like, man, that's a disappointment that he did that. But, you know, it's not mind blowing. Like, nobody, I can't imagine he woke up one day like, I'm going to kill my wife. You know, I'm sure that it was like a step by step sort of slow process where he felt like he didn't have any other options. And, you know, I can't say that if I was in the same situation as him, you know, that it would have been a thought that didn't enter my head, you know? But
so you didn't feel like it was like, oh man, now we're gonna have to deal with this as a Christian band. We're gonna have to deal with, like, you know, this pretty almost like a figurehead for your genre, kind of, you know, taking a serious fall.
No, I mean, it's like people mess up.
Yeah,
that's what people do. That's what makes us people.
See, anytime I hear about like a shooting or anything like that, I go, please let this not be a heavy metal fan. Like, we already have it hard enough.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, like, what your thought process was, you know?
I think people expected me to want to, you know, release some sort of statement. And it's like, man, yeah, everybody was like, all right, we need to pray for Tim because he's going to go to jail and things are going bad in his life. And, you know, as sweet as that sentiment is, like, how many people were praying for him before this happened? You know, how many people were praying for his marriage that was falling apart, and for his kids that were stuck in the middle of this situation, and, you know, for him under the incredible amounts of pressure that he's under, the incredible amounts of responsibility that he has, both as a father and a husband, and also as the vocalist for his band, you know, and it's like, man, how many people were encouraging him and holding him up in those situations? Because I think if he had enough people doing that, that maybe, you know, maybe he wouldn't have felt so desperate that he needed to go to those lengths, you know?
Wow, yeah. I never thought about it like that. You know, I think when I was getting into bands that were more like serious about their message, like a band like Earth Crisis, I saw everybody would try to like find the way that they're contradicting their belief.
Yeah.
Do you deal with that too?
Oh, totally. Yeah, all the time. There's like Christian watchdogs on the internet who just are all about like, oh, Maddie said something wrong and Maddie's doing something wrong. There was a blog about me being in a cult recently and a bunch of stuff. And it's like,
People
would love
that
to
comes
see
up
us
when you search you,
fail.
Yeah, because of like those, yeah. What do you think about like those stadium type of churches and stuff where they you know get millions and millions of dollars coming in? I mean, do you feel like that's exploitive at all? Or is exploitive a word? It sounds pretty legit.
I know what you mean. It sounds like a good word. How do I feel about it? I think that depends on what they do with the money they're getting.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if it's,
because you don't
bank,
seem like
a
dude
bomb,
that's
man.
Like rolling in the Escalade with
not.
The rims and
not.
The, and
I would, you know, I wouldn't hate it, but I,
but you wouldn't but not, like, use your faith to attain that type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, no, I like, I don't think there's anything wrong with having money, but with money, it's like Uncle Ben said in Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility, you know?
Yeah.
So if you have that kind of money and influence in your city, you know, the responsibility that you have to use that money and to use that influence right grows, you know, exponentially.
Right. Give to the poor,
right.
Give to the schools, give to the programs that need it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we have so many people who just love to be critical that they say, well, this church is doing something wrong because they have thousands of members and millions of dollars. And it's like, well, I don't know. Like,
right.
If I had millions of dollars right now, I wouldn't really know what to do with it. So,
but that's also in every religion, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's in really every walk of life. I mean, if you have a successful business, if you're in a band and your band is successful, and you're making a lot of money, like, then you have to think about, what am I going to do with this? How am I going to affect the lives of the people close to me or impact my community with what I've been given? Because now, you know, this is not just about me surviving anymore. This is about me having more than enough. And how can I help other people survive and flourish as well.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I'm not mad at those churches, but you know, it depends on what they do
and
when
that,
they get the money.
I feel like that could be said for so many different situations in life, even going back to what we were just talking about with the streaming and stuff. It's like, how much money does Apple need? How much money does the owner of even our label, Razor and Tie, or Nuclear Blast, or Metal Blade, or Victory, like how much do they really need? Like at some point, it's just greedy. Like give back to the artists that are out here. I mean, you guys, I'm looking at all these bands unloading their trailers, and please be safe, by the way. All these bands, I'm like, I always worry about all you dudes. I'm like, please no more, like, flying off, you know, into ravines and trailer tires blowing. Like, I go, man, it's, you're putting your life at risk. You say you have kids at home.
Yeah.
Like, I just read about these bands that, you know, they crash into the, you know, side of the Jersey barrier or whatever and get killed just to play a show.
Yeah.
Like, it's not worth it.
No.
And, you know, I see all you guys out here. I'm watching these guys load in because we're recording this podcast in my car. but, you know, it's got to be, at some point, you got to go, is the juice worth the squeeze? Right? Do you find yourself now as you're getting older asking yourself that?
Yeah, man. I mean, I've been doing this. I mean, it's nothing compared to you, but I've been doing this for 8-9 years now. And like full time. And it's cool. And I love it. You know, at this point, we've gone way beyond anything I thought we were going to do when we first started. I thought we'd put out an album or two, do some tours, make some friends, and then move on with our lives. But you know, now with a wife and kids and a house back home, like, you know, there's, I've got responsibilities, people that I miss. I'm settled down, putting down roots in Alabama. And so now, now being gone is a little bit more demanding, I think, than it was when I didn't have a home or any relationships or anything like that. But
my daughter's 16.
Oh,
and let me tell you.
Yeah.
What, just first of all, no show is worth missing all the birthdays and stuff. I know all my fans are going to be like, but dude, but listen, I appreciate all my fans of every show. I did like 3,000 shows. It's insane. But I start to look back and I go, I think about like those little like 150 person shows we could have skipped that we lost money to go do.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, it's time flies. How old are your kids?
2 and 3.
Okay. Now what if one of your kids says to you 15 years from now, I'm going to convert. I need to be Orthodox Jew or a Muslim. What do you say?
I'm going to grab them and say, man, I love you so much.
And that's it.
I mean, if his mind is made up, you know, if he asks me what I think about it, we can have that conversation. But, you know, if his mind is made up, like, I got to love him. You know, that's my son. I'm not going anywhere. You know, even if, and we do, they're 2 and 3 and we still have disagreements. You know, they want to take a toy to bed, but it's a toy that makes noise, and I know they won't go to sleep if they take it to bed. You know what I mean? Simple stuff. And they get mad about it, but I don't go anywhere. I don't abandon them.
Yeah.
You know, and like, you hear about these parents cutting their kids out of their life because they leave the faith or because they come out of the closet as gay or whatever. And it's like, that's ridiculous, man. Like, that's not love.
Yeah.
That sucks. So, you know,
I had the singer of the Butcher Babies on the show. She was raised Mormon and they didn't like excommunicate her, but it was very hard for them when she went to pursue rock and roll and you know, radio and stuff like that. And for me, I went to church a couple times as a, I think it was an Episcopalian.
Uh-huh.
My father's in Vietnam, was just trying to, I think, appease my mother. I think, you know, coming out of Vietnam, it's hard to have faith in anything, especially the way that they were treated and the shit that went down with the government and things like that. But that seemed to me like a very almost like hippie type of vibe there.
Yeah.
But is that, you're not Episcopalian, right? What do you call it?
Just a non-denominational Christian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but when you go to church, there's no like name as far as like what, because I see like, I know some, like my neighbors, they go to the Baptist church.
Yeah.
Baptist,
yeah.
Which I don't know what that is. I probably should.
That's, you know, I think at the end of the day, for a lot of these denominations, it's just semantics. Some of the stuff that they, you know, maybe Episcopalians or Methodists and Baptists got in a fight over something and one guy went one way and another guy went another way. And now 300 years later, we have these sects of Christianity that disagree on one little thing in the Bible. And so we go to one church and you go to another. But I mean, at the end of the day, like, I think that it's all built on the foundation of that we were sinners and that Jesus died to pay the price for our sin so that we could live in relationship with God.
So is there anything in the Bible that you're not backing or that doesn't sit with you well? Or have you read the whole Bible?
Yeah. No, man. I mean, there's stuff in the Bible that I
interpret differently or whatever.
I think a right and a wrong way to interpret it. And, you know, that's why it's important to be connected to people who are smarter than you and to be connected to people who've been doing it for longer than you so that they can help make sure you don't screw it up.
There's stuff in the Bible that's
crazy sometimes.
It's got to grind your gears then when you see these other, denominations?
Yeah.
And they're like pitching some things that aren't aligned with your values.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so do you ever like open a debate or do you just try to live and let live?
It's kind of like with my son. If their mind is made up, I can just grab him and say, I love you.
Yeah.
You know? I think at the end of the day, if we agree on that it's the blood of Jesus that sets us free from our sin, I think everything else can take a second place to that, you know?
Right.
There's stuff that I think is important that other people maybe don't, or that other people think is important that I don't, and I think there's a discussion to be had with that, but it's just like with anything, you know, if I was a vegan and I thought that everybody needed to be a vegan, maybe I would share that with my friends or the people that I was around that I really cared about. And I'd say, man, you know, I love you. I care about you and want to see you live a healthy life. So I think you should be a vegan.
Yeah.
But
the ways that it's benefited right. you.
But then when it gets weird is when, you know, you start running up to a stranger, like you need to be a vegan, put that burger down, you know?
Yeah.
And the same is true for like sharing my faith that like, you know, there's people in my life who, because I know them and I have a relationship with them and I care about them, or even people who are fans of the band who come here because they care what I have to say, I'll share it with them, you know? And even as I'm meeting strangers, if I feel like the conversation is right and we have a rapport, then I'll share my faith with them. I'm not the kind of guy who's going to run up to a total stranger who doesn't know me from Adam and be like, yo, you know, you need to come to my church because your church is whack. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, or like, you're an atheist, you're stupid. You need to come and, you know, come to church with me, read the Bible. You know, I think it's important that we understand that relationship is kind of the foundation of any interaction,
yeah.
You know? And if I don't have a relationship with someone, I don't really have the right or the invitation to go and demand that person, you know, submit to what I think is right.
You know, the Pope's been like tweeting like a maniac, like, and gaining like, you know, a lot of, you know, media attention, like positive media attention that I don't think we've ever seen with a previous Pope. Now, is that something you followed at all?
Not at all. I'm not a Catholic.
Okay.
I'm not.
Now, what's the difference between Catholicism and
there's
what
a lot
you
of
believe?
Them. There's a lot of them. Really what
my
it boils
father
down
was
to.
Catholic. And the guilt, man, it's crazy. But I used to ask my father, I would go, so wait, you can shoot somebody. And then you can go and, you know,
say some Hail Marys, confess.
Yes.
Yeah. That's weird, right? Here's the difference. Catholicism in some very major ways is built on tradition. You know, we go to guys who wear these types of clothes and they say these sorts of things and service is laid out this particular way. The church is built in a certain way, all based on tradition. Whereas what I believe the Bible invites us to is a relationship with God through Jesus. And the difference for that is like, for example, when I was about to join this band, I didn't have like a pastor to go and talk to or anybody like that. But I was praying like, God, if this is what you want me to do, I need you to make it obvious. And so I was going to leave from Lansing, Michigan. I was playing one show with the band that I was in before this, and I was going to leave from Lansing and come out to try out for these guys. And a girl walks up to me and she says, hey, God told me to give you $200 and she handed me $200. I used that to buy a one-way bus ticket from Lansing, Michigan to Iowa, where the band was at, to meet up with them and to join Four Today. So, you know, I could tell you hundreds of stories like that. But the point is that, you know, it, for me, it wasn't about like, well, what did my pastor do or what's everybody else in my church doing? I got to fit into the mold. It was like, man, God has a plan for me. And if I'm willing to listen, I don't need a priest to tell me how to do it. I don't need to, you know, to go to mass, you know, three times a week to make sure that I'm on point. I can connect to God. I can hear God on my own. And he'll bring me to a place where I can become the man that he's called me to be. And, you know, and I think that things that are heavily tradition based, like Catholicism, that what we risk or what we lose in building cultures like that is the diversity and the uniqueness, that's supposed to mark the culture of God's people. You know, if we have a bunch of people coming to church together and they're all the same color, they're all about the same age, they all, you know, live in the same financial class, they all talk the same and act the same and think the same and listen to the same music and view the world the same, we're only going to be able to offer the rest of the world one thing, and that is people that fit this little mold. And we try to cram people into our mold. But man, I think that if God really builds something that is going to cross racial boundaries and generational boundaries and financial boundaries and cultural boundaries. You know, one of my best friends in the world, his name's Caleb, and he's 86 years old. He's an 86 year old white man.
That's great.
Who is like a pastor in Honduras. And he's the best. He's hilarious.
I like gel with old people. I can talk to old people for hours.
And I feel like if something is real, that it shouldn't be confined to one people group, and that, you know, I don't tell him he needs to listen to metal and get tattoos, and he doesn't tell me that I should cover my tattoos up and quit playing in this devil band. You know, like we celebrate each other. We celebrate what God is doing in each other's lives, and we support each other. So, you know, that I think is something that is lost in a big way in churches like the Catholic Church that is so sort of heavily tied to tradition is that innovation gets lost in exchange for tradition.
Are there too many people like looking for like answers in the wrong places, do you think? Like, because I feel like I'll find myself even where I'll go, well, why this and why that? And I go, at some point, it gets to the point where I get like this why fatigue, where I'm like, all right, enough with the whys. Like, I was watching UFC. I was watching a rerun of the UFC, and this guy's like, I think, you know, Jesus Christ, he told me, he came to me, he said I was going to win this fight and this and that. And I started thinking, well, why you and not the other guy?
Yeah.
You know? And do you ever find yourself being that why guy?
Being like the cynical person? Totally.
Yeah.
I do. That's like my sort of natural instinct. But to be honest, man, I think all of us, to some extent, some greater than others, have to be willing to say at some point, I don't know. You know, I'd like to know why, but I don't know.
You know?
Like, why doesn't God come and just like sit down in the middle of Washington, D.C., like, hey, everybody, here I am, and just settle the debate? Like, well, I don't know. You know, and I could come up with an answer. Like, why, how come I've prayed for blind people to be healed and seen their eyes opened in a moment? And why have I seen cancer leave people's bodies and broken bones mend themselves? And then sometimes when I pray for people, nothing happens.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I really don't. And those are questions that I've wrestled with a lot, but, I have to be willing to cling to the things that I do know. And that is that God is good and that he loves us. And that he is able to do whatever he wants. And as much as there's a lot of other questions I would like to have answered, you know, at the end of the day, I have to sort of go through my process on my own and, you know, take the answers as they come.
Yeah, I was going to ask your publicist. I'm like, I hope he's not tired of all the Jesus questions and all the religion questions.
Yeah, well, I expected that you would want to talk to me about, like, you know, breakdowns and tour and stuff. So,
well, I want to get to that too. All but right. I just feel like there's so many listeners that are of all different religions. I mean, I have so many people who listen who are in Indonesia who are Muslim. I have people who listen, you know, all over Europe, which now I feel like Europe is like a whole new market opening up for bands that have different styles and different messages. Especially with the Christian scene, it seems like it's finally getting a foothold there.
Maybe. I don't know.
Last tour?
We've never done great in Europe. But, I mean, I think the reality is that Europe has seen the ugly side of religion.
Yeah.
And I use the word religion on purpose because religion is the tradition that revolves around a faith. Now, there's faith that I can have, and that can be personal. That can be something that sort of revolves around me interacting with God and having my personal relationship with God. And then there's religion, and that is all the stuff that people do to try to please God. You
right.
know,
you're not justifying wars. You're not justifying any of this horrible shit that was done in the name of Jesus.
Right.
You're talking about your personal relationship.
Yeah. And a personal relationship that anybody else can have, you know? But you know, there's such a weird thing that Europe has seen. Europe has seen the Crusades. You know, they've seen the stuff that people have done in the name of God that is disgusting and perverse. So, you know, so when I stand up there and I'm like, hey, we follow Jesus, there's a lot of people that are like, we did it in Italy, 10 miles away from the Vatican. It's like if the Vatican, you know, for a lot of these people, they see the Vatican as like the center of, you know, excess and irresponsible spending, and there's billions of dollars.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad stuff.
And it's like, man, you know, that's not what I'm not talking about the people who have used Jesus to manipulate and control and destroy other people. I'm talking about
you're not defending them.
Right, not at all. But I'm talking about the Jesus who died for me, who taught people how to love each other. Who hung out with sinners, who refused to get caught up in the petty political disputes of his time, and who spent his time serving the people that were around him, even though he could have been the ruler of all of them. That's a big deal, I think.
There was a podcast that I listened to called Hardcore History by this guy Dan Carlin, and he was talking about all the shit the Lutherans did in the name of Christianity.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, like he was saying, like back then, like if you had a problem with you know, one of the priests or one of the, you know, the what do they call that? The day, you know, when they speak of something for the day, the
message, the sermon,
right? That there was no message board, there was no social media. You went and you had to man up and
post
a letter like and pin it to the church,
really? Okay.
And anybody that like questioned would, you know, they were filleting them and, you know, guillotines and shit like that. And so,
what if we did that to people who like tweeted wax stuff?
Yeah. That might be okay. No, that's terrible. But it made me think about, you know, just the various different things that I've seen in my life. And I'm a little older than you, but how old are you?
27.
Okay, so I'm 10 years older than you. So, you know, in my growing up, when I was, you know, 9 to 10, when my mother was trying to find her way and was going through, I guess, a time in her life where she needed to go to a church. I do remember, you know, there was a Lutheran church. There was a Holy Trinity church. There was a Episcopalian one, which we ended up going to a couple times. And I used to think, why aren't these people, you know, like down with each other? Then I remember my grandmother being like, no, we're Catholics on your dad's side.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, my dad is, you know, going to the VA for PTSD and has all these problems and is, you know, is like, I'm not Catholic.
Yeah,
I'm not religious.
Doing for him.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it seems like, and getting back to this podcast I was listening to, it seems like there's a lot of like miscommunication within these, you know, various different churches. And then there's a lot of like envy and social things, like everything that you're supposed to use, like your spirituality to get away from is happening like in these little inner circles.
Yeah, bro. And I mean, that stuff happens where there are people, you know, people of any faith, of any background, you know, of any sort of social or economic standing. Where you have people, you're going to have pride messing stuff up, you know? I heard a man say one time, you know, being angry because they're hypocrites in church is like being angry because there are sick people in the hospital.
Yeah.
Like that's where we go to. That's where I go to get my hypocrisy dealt with. You know, somebody, right. people in my church will call me out on my stuff. If I'm standing on stage saying one thing and trying to live a different thing, you know, in my private life, there are people in my church who know me well enough to like pull me aside and run me through the ringer about that. So, you know, that's a human thing is failure. And, you know, that's why I can't say that every church is going to help, but if, you know, if we find a church who, you know, loves God, who loves each other and who loves you, I think that it's inevitable that, there are going to be people who are willing to get in your business and help make sure that you don't stay that like prideful, egotistical, divisive person that all of us sort of tend to be.
Yeah. Do you listen to podcasts at all?
No.
There's a podcast that came out, I think it was yesterday. Well, people will be listening to this on Thursday, but it would be Monday, where Mark Maron, he interviewed Obama, and Obama said the N-word, and it's starting to make, like, global headlines.
Yeah, old white people are outraged.
Right.
Yeah.
But you can actually comment on this being half black and half white.
Yeah.
That, you know, did you see the quote, or do you know what was said?
I do, and that is... he was saying, like, it's just not good manners to say nigger in public.
Yeah.
Here's
and that
the
it
deal.
Goes beyond that.
Yeah.
That racism in America goes way beyond that.
Yeah, goes way beyond just some word. You know? But I think the thing that blows my mind is that people would completely miss the point of what he's saying. Completely ignore and overlook that. It doesn't blow my mind. I've learned that the masses are ignorant and unruly. But it is a sad thing to see that people have completely overlooked his point and got mad because he said the N-word.
Yeah.
It's like if Obama was like, me and my niggas were just kicking it out at the basketball court behind the White House, I could see people being like, you know, that's a weird thing for the president to say. I don't know why he would just drop that. But like, treating stuff like that like it doesn't exist is not the way to get past it. You know, being mature enough to hear what the man is saying instead of getting bent out of shape because he said the word.
I was blown away that people thought he was, you know, like saying it like it's okay to say it. It's not okay to say it to someone as an insult.
Yeah.
But if you're saying it in context of like, look, this is such a negative word that was used in terrible, you know, times in our history as Americans. You know, I know CNN doesn't want to say the actual word on any broadcast, but is that giving the word too much power?
Yeah, man. Yes, it is giving the word too much power. You know, any word is just it's. Will lose its power, or no word has any power that you don't give it, you know? And so if I was walking down the street and somebody was screaming the N word at me, and I ignored them and walked by, that word would have no power, you know? But the fact that the president said it while he was making a legitimate point, and now millions and millions of people are hearing about it, and then everybody in the media is outraged for no reason. It's like, man, this word still has way more power than it ever should have had.
A very wise, mature thing. Like you, because what basically by walking away from a situation like that, or ignoring someone saying something like that, you're taking the power out of it. You're not any less of a man. You're not defending yourself, but you're doing a smart thing by saying I'm above.
Right.
Taking it to this level where we would even have to say something so ugly and hateful to somebody.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or retaliate
in
this way, which, you know, I was after this whole shooting in South Carolina, and I know people in South Carolina, and I was going back and forth with them like, man, it's disgusting, you know, that you know, now this kid is getting his face on all these papers and that the media is like, you know, taking this story and running with it in such a way where they're not like honoring the victims, I feel like, enough.
Yeah.
They're starting to now, I'm seeing. But it really started to make me think, and I know I said this earlier in the podcast, but like, you know, I worry when stuff like this comes out that it's going to be, you know,
some metal kid,
and we're going to take a step back as a music community, because I feel like there's so many open-minded, smart, intelligent, peaceful, engaging, honest, nice metal fans.
Yeah.
But then there's always like this one fucking idiot that, you know, will ruin it for us.
Every group has that.
Yeah.
Like we have the Westboro Baptist Church.
That's where I was going with this.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, basically this is where I was going with this.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm yapping my face off. I've had so much caffeine. So I was thinking everybody got together down there, and there was like these just amazing photos of, you know, 10,000-15,000 people of all races, of all religions, getting together and saying, yeah, we're not going, there's not going to be riots, there's not going to be fights, we're banding together as a people, as one race, the human race. And I was like, I was really moved by that, and I thought, I hope this stays this way until the funerals, and if these idiots go and try to protest these funerals, I hope they can still keep the composure.
Yeah, exactly, man, and that's I think is the hard part, is about focusing on helping each other, achieve good things instead of fighting the people that we think are doing bad things, you know? And that's, you know, that is the trick to progress. You know, we get so caught up fighting over this guy said this thing wrong, or this person believes something that's wrong, and trying to correct what we think is wrong, instead of encouraging and celebrating the things that we see that are right, that we have people now intentionally doing things that they know are going to be viewed as wrong, intentionally doing self-destructive, harmful, irresponsible things, because that's the only way they're going to get attention.
Yeah.
Because we don't celebrate the good in the world. We fight against what we think is bad in the world. And that I think is a tragic thing. People aren't striving to be excellent. People are striving to get noticed. And unfortunately, and in a lot of circles, the only way to get noticed in our world is to be self-destructive and to be harmful.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's hopefully something like podcasting, I think, could change that. Just with President Obama being on Mark Maron's podcast already, yeah, it's like a great time. But one of the cool things about the podcast is I've had on people like from Black Veil Brides and everybody, you know, to like death metal guys like Barney from Napalm Death, who's an atheist, or like comedians like Jim Norton, who's like very edgy and,
yeah,
you know, risque with his comedy. And so like a lot of people are going to hear this and they're going to go, wow, I never would think that Maddie from Fort Today was such a cool dude or such a down-to-earth person.
Oh,
and so that's why I feel like we need more mediums and more outlets, yeah, for our music and our messages, because we're not given the chance to go on, you know, national networks and say something as powerful as, right, you just said. Like, wow, let's celebrate the good and, you know, let's promote that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's I think there's something to be said in this culture, out of this culture, you know, and it's funny to me, man, seeing the way that, you know, our subgenre even impacts mainstream culture without people realizing it. You know, even things like Skrillex, for example,
right?
I can't remember the guy's name, but was in From First to Last,
yep,
right? So that's a band from our world,
yeah.
You know, and this is a guy who, in touring with that band, came up with the idea for this kind of music and like sort of pioneered or made dubstep into this, at least in the United States, into this phenomenon, this cultural phenomenon that really was birthed out of, in some ways, our, you know, our scene. And, you know, it's funny, I think, to see the way that we really, as a community, as a subculture, really are impacting the mainstream, but in a very subversive, kind of subtle way.
Well, yeah, because a lot of people then, when someone gets a huge amount of success, will say, oh, well, they're not with us anymore, or they left us behind. And that's happened I see this a lot, especially with the punk and the hardcore scene, where there's people who become famous directors or famous chefs. Right. Or
Henry Rollins.
Like, right.
He's not one of us anymore.
Right. Okay. And so I think as a collective consciousness, we need to kind of, you know, build these people up and support them and not be like, oh, well, they're now that because they're popular, because they're mainstream, they weren't ever down with us. That's just not the case. I mean, I dealt with that being on Headbangers Ball, and I'm like, you would think you dumb motherfuckers would want, sorry for my language, would want somebody on the inside fighting for you.
Yeah, right.
And so anybody that actually was, you know, not supporting me or saying, oh, he's a sellout now, or he's, you know, working for Viacom or whatever, I would be like, well, then don't come ask me to get your video played.
Yeah, right.
And don't have your label. You know?
Yeah.
And so, but you're right. There are a lot of people who have come up through the ranks in hardcore and heavy metal, yeah, who have gone on to do different things that were great things,
yeah,
and have been seen in mainstream media outlets, but it doesn't, you know, the history doesn't get told.
Right. Yeah. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of like that.
Yeah. So when you're, so you won't forget about the little podcast, guys, when you're like the Joel Osteen and you're selling out stadiums and you're speaking.
If I'm selling out stadiums where I'm speaking and you want to come and do another podcast or one of those,
we can do it. All right, great. So you'll be like,
I'll put you on the stage. You can be there and we'll just, I'll preach the gospel and you can be over there in like a 3-piece suit just yelling, hey, man. I'll give you a tambourine or something.
So before we go, that we should talk about breakdowns and we should talk about some music stuff. The new album, what's it going to be called? Can we say that?
Nobody knows yet. You are the first person I'm telling.
Thank you for the exclusive. Look at that.
This is an exclusive reveal. Your listeners just had to sit through an hour and a half talking about Jesus stuff for this. But the exclusive reveal, we're coming out with the new album. It's going to be called Wake.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the new record. It should be out this fall. It's finished. We just got masters back like yesterday.
Who mixed it?
Will Putney.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And who, he's the producer as well?
Yeah.
Okay. You weren't worried about, is that the fox watching the hen house or you weren't worried about that?
No, I wasn't worried about it. I mean, he knows what he's doing.
Okay.
He feels like a member of the band. We've recorded so many records with him. Like he's been a friend of ours for so long that it's just, it's easy to lock ourselves in a room with him for a month and just hammer it out. So
the producer should be like the extra member, right?
Yeah.
The fifth. You guys have your four piece.
Yeah.
And you're hoping for November.
September. Yeah.
Oh, so you're gonna do like a big fall tour and
that's the plan. Yeah.
So when do you get a break to go home and do the birthdays and the beach and the park? And
we get done with this tour on like July 10th. I don't do anything until we leave for that tour in September.
Great.
So I have like, you know, months off.
Okay, great. So you get to go be a regular person.
Yeah.
That's
I mean, I'm going home. My wife and I just bought a house. We're moving in like next week. So
congrats.
Thank you.
By the way,
going home to the new house and doing the dad thing.
I just did a show in Alabama, Slipknot and Hatebreed. It was like one of the best shows of the tour. Is this like, I hope this is a sign of things turning around because I feel like it was bad for a long time. The Alabamas and the Tennessees and the South Carolinas, it just wasn't good for us. I don't know about for you guys. I'm sure it's probably, I would think at this point, almost as good or better than it was for Hatebreed. But it's just like, maybe it's because we're Yankees.
That must be it.
Right? Like, them damn Yankees are playing the breakdowns. We don't want to hear that shit.
We don't want to hear that.
But it was like one of the best shows of the tour. So is it turning around? Have you seen it like locally? Do you go to shows?
Yeah. When we started out, shows in Alabama were like fine. But I remember we did a tour with Despised Icon and Winds of Plague like 6 years ago. And we came through and played Birmingham. And it was like twice as big as every other show on the tour. The kids absolutely lost their minds. It was completely insane. And I thought ever since then, Birmingham, the entire state of Alabama has just been nuts.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what the deal is. That was like 5 or 6 years ago. But Alabama is cool.
It's great. I mean, it shows promise. I mean, we just did Memphis and it was bad. It was probably one of the smallest shows.
Yeah. When we started Memphis, it was awesome. And it has progressively gotten worse.
Yeah. So it's like some scenes kind of just fall off while others rise up.
Yeah.
What's been the best show of this tour with Gideon? Now they're from Alabama.
We're like
right?
3 days in.
Okay,
they are from Alabama. Yeah, but we're like 3 days in right now. So far, Buffalo, New York was like surprisingly sick. Yeah, we've had some shows in Buffalo have been like hit or miss for us, but we just played there last night. It was wild.
And what are you guys jamming in the van? Like, what are the tunes? Like
today, we were listening to Brian McKnight.
Okay. I used to be label mates with Brian McKnight.
I think we are.
E1.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, yeah. Oh, wait.
Well, I don't know if he's currently on Razor and Tie, but I think he has an album that came out.
Maybe it was Razor and Tie.
Yeah. Brian McKnight, bro. We love
it. Did they give you the promo or you actually bought it?
I think we were doing it on Spotify, which.
Okay. Jeez.
Which is bad.
He's not going to see a penny from that.
I'm realizing this. He might see 1/12th of a cent from that.
So, but what about like who's the good heavy bands coming out like that I need to check out? Like I'm so out of the loop.
We were listening to Fit for an Autopsy on the way.
Oh, right, yeah, they were on the Crowbar tour and they're heavy.
They're so heavy. It's ridiculous. Yeah, I mean we just got our new masters back yesterday and I was like sick. And then we listened to Fit for an Autopsy and I was like,
you're like, who makes this?
Yeah, our new album is so weak like compared to that. But
that's probably like tuned to like F and like what are you guys doing?
Yeah, it's
to?
And they're like, you know, blast beats all the time. I think we tuned to like B sharp. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm making stuff up.
Do you have any like guilty death metal satanic music pleasures, or you can't even talk about that? Like, would you go listen to like Morbid Angel?
I have never really been a huge metal fan. Like one of my favorite heavy band is like Comeback Kid.
Okay.
Other than that, I listen to like Jason Mraz.
Really? I don't even know what that is.
That's I listen to like singer songwriter acoustic.
So what, like, if I had to listen to a song from him, what would I check out? What's his best tune?
He's got a song, Jason Mraz.
See, I was hoping you were going to be like, you know what, dude? I got to say, I got the first two DSI records that I love. I know I'm not supposed to say
I know that would blow your mind. No, I'm sorry. We're just surrounded by like, open this pit up, let's go. That when it's like my turn to pick, that's the last thing on my list.
Yeah, you
know, I'll listen to like rap music and folk music.
So
and
what?
Stuff
like what's good in rap now? When I was a kid, we had like Public Enemy and Mobb Deep and N.W.A. and like stuff that was scary and hard. And these kids,
now it's like, just like flamboyant sort of. It's weird. Yeah, it's like weak.
It's rappers weak, are weak. Right?
Yeah,
and I'm not talking. Don't hip hop fans don't write me. You know, I'm not talking about real hip-hop, lyrical, backpack rapper stuff. I'm talking about, like, mainstream.
Yeah, I just discovered this dude, like, last week. His name is NF.
Okay.
Just the letters, NF. He's unbelievable.
Really?
Yeah, it's like, I'm about to say something real controversial.
Okay.
It's like if you took Eminem and made him a little bit scarier.
Really?
Yeah. And a Christian.
No way.
And the dude, yeah, I think the dude loves Jesus. I literally watched, he has a track on YouTube called Intro.
Okay.
It's an intro, and it's like just a 3-minute long verse. That is one of the sickest things I've ever heard in my life.
Really? Well, check it out.
Yeah, I was pissed.
I wonder if we could get clearance to play it on the podcast, or if I'd have to
do it.
Or if I'd have to
just
pay.
Just don't even get clearance. Like Spotify. Just put it on there.
Well, Maddie, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Good luck with the album. Wait, going to be in stores in September. If you get a street date before this, I'm going to get this edited and get it up for Thursday. But if you get the street date before then, we'll plug it. But, you know, be safe on tour. Tell all these guys I say hello to from Gideon and these other bands. Yeah, I got to split. I got to go pick up my daughter from dance class. But seriously, man, great talking with you.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks for the time. And good luck with the album. Wake, September. You think it's going to be early September or late September?
I don't know. That's up to Razor and Ty.
All right. All right. Well, we'll plug it when we get the info.
Cool. Thank you, man.
All right. Thanks, man. All right. There he is, everybody. Maddie from Fort Today. Big thanks to him, and thanks again to Claire and Carrie from Razor and Tie Records for making it happen on such short notice. Check out their record Wake when it hits stores in September, and let's check out one of our label mates. Here's some live audio from Quello.com. This is the band All That Remains. You guys know them. We've had Phil Labonte on the show. We got to get a part two with Phil. That reminds me. I got to hit him up. Check it out. Here's All That Remains with Tattered on My Sleeve from their live DVD. We'll be right back. All right, that was Tattered on My Sleeve from All That Remains Live, and you can watch that video on Quello.com/VIP/Jamie Josta. Follow Quello Concerts on Twitter and tell them Josta sent you, and you know, when you sign up, you get that free trial. We get a kickback here at the Josta Show, and I will definitely use some of that money to get a better hard drive and to pay for some of this data recovery, which is going to be, it's going to be in the thousands to get these other podcasts off that hard drive. But anyways, thanks so much for the support, everybody. Thank you for the kind words. Make sure you leave a rating and a review on iTunes. I see that we finally broke the 250 mark, but it really helps when you leave a rating and a review over on iTunes, and make sure you're subscribed, and in the comments, leave whoever you want to hear on a future guest. Any suggestions, you can do so there, or drop an email, jostashow@gmail.com, also facebook.com/JostaHQ. I will hopefully be back Monday with another new episode. I will speak to you then.